would like to take up the same subject of the encounter which we have been discussing last time from a slightly different angle. I have said that the word encounter defines the total situation of the gospel, that all in the gospel is an encounter. We have spoken last time about the encounter which is at the center of all things, that of man with God and with a God revealed in a peculiar way, a God whom man would not have chosen to invent to himself, a God vulnerable, helpless, a God defeated seemingly, and therefore a God contemptible for all men. And against this background, we have discussed the fact that the gospel and its basic essential encounter upset all our scale of values, that it claims for us a complete change in our approach to what is great and what it means, to what is of value and what is worthless. I would like tonight to speak of the encounter and try to analyze a certain number of its characters. First of all, it is obvious that the encounter, of which the gospel gives us innumerable examples, does not consist simply in the fact that people meet, that they happen to be in the same place, and that they perceive one another's presence. One can be in the same place, one can perceive one another's presence, without this meeting being an encounter in the sense in which the gospel shows us encounters of men. We meet people in the underground. We are pressed against them. We perceive them as volume, as heat, as smell, in a variety of ways. We meet people continuously in the street. We may even run into them without ever thinking that we have met a person. So there are a certain number of things which are the condition of a real encounter and not of the collision of worlds which happens continuously between us and other individuals. First of all, an encounter presupposes that we recognize the existence of the other, and that we recognize the fact that the other has got a right to exist in himself, in relation with us, possibly, but certainly not in function of us. The fact that we have perceived a person, an individual, of course, establishes at once a relation. But this relation must be also a recognition. We must recognize that the other one has a right to be himself, however it affects us. And we must be capable, and this is an essential further point, we must be capable of stepping back in order to look number of conditions are necessary. We must be capable of distancing ourselves, of taking a step back in order to look from a position that allows us to see. I think I can best convey what I mean by reminding you of the way in which we look at a piece of art, whether it is a painting or a statue. We must stand at a given distance in order to be able to see what is offered to our examination. If we stand too far, we cannot see the details which the artist wanted to convey. If we come too near a painting, we lose the sense of its wholeness. We see only part of it, and therefore a distorted part, a part which is not related to the whole. If we try to do the same with a statue, we discover that there is only one point in space from which each of us, according to the quality of his eyes perhaps, can look effectively at a statue. If you stand too far, you have a blurred impression. But if you come too near, you lose instead of gaining, because a statue is not like a human face, which can be examined closer and closer and reveal an increasing number of details. A statue is made in such a way, it works in such a way, that it conveys its significance from a certain distance by a certain amount of details, but you cannot find any more of them by coming closer. By coming closer, what you will discover is only the quality, the texture, the fabric of the stone, no longer the statue. The same is true with a human person. We must be placed at a certain distance that will allow us to see all that we are capable of seeing, not all that can be seen, but all that we can see. But if we come closer, that is, if we establish a relationship, a relatedness that does not respect this law of distance and mutual independence, we lose sight of what we are to see. The Gospel speaks of looking with a clear, with a limpid eye. Isn't it worth mentioning, perhaps, that the eye is the only sense that allows us to perceive dispassionately? Now, when I speak of distance, it isn't obviously a question of physical distance. It is not by moving away from someone in space that we can discover more or less of the person. But it is a way of distancing oneself in such a way that a person is seen related to us, because outside, apart from the relation, we can see nothing, we can perceive nothing, be aware of nothing, but not in function of us. We must be free from the person, and the person must be free of us. I have already quoted this example, and for the few who possibly remember function of herself. She sees them for what they are, for a fact, and for a fact that is adequate to, shall we say, their vocation, what they should be. And then, because she is free of self-centered reaction to them, she begins to see more than she was able to see before. She sees through this first layer of opacity, layers of decreasing darkness, of increasing translucence, then of transparence, and at the core, at the heart of this river, she perceives a stream of pure, shining water, which is the primeval water, the water as created by God. And at the heart of this water, she perceives, she sees those waters of which Christ spoke to the Samaritan woman. Well, here we discover a process which is to the opposite of our usual way of seeing and of responding. Usually, we see opacity, and this opacity makes us incapable of seeing any light beyond. Or else, when we perceive transparency, translucence, we discover somewhere at the core of it is darkness. And this darkness is born usually from the fact that we relate this person to us and we begin to judge, taking ourselves as a criterion or as the center of things. So that if any encounter is to have any value, it must begin with the recognition that the other exists, with the acceptance of his otherness, with the acceptance of his right to be profoundly distinct and different from us. It must lead us to look at him from the right distance that allows us to see beauty, and in such unrelatedness or such freedom from ourselves, from self-centeredness, and from him in his self-centeredness, that will allow us to see him as Lester saw the river Thames. But this is not enough, because we cannot have clear vision, clear voice, unless we either love or hate, with the difference that hatred makes us capable of perceiving every flaw, every failure, everything that is wrong, but makes us blind to the rest. While love allows us to see things both good and bad and give them their true value, yet without condemning, without rejecting. In the same novel, in the beginning of it, the soul of Lester is standing on one of the London bridges where death has overtaken her. She stands there an unfathomable amount of time. We cannot guess how long it was, because all she can perceive is herself, the little spot of bridge on which her feet rest, the plane that brought her life to an end, and around no one. The bridge is deserted. dispassionately, and therefore responds to nothing except her own self, until, at a certain moment, her husband chances to cross that bridge. She sees him, as I say, he also sees her and runs, because it is a rather unusual thing to meet one's wife, one's departed wife, so standing on the bridge. But she sees him because he is the only person she has ever loved, however unsatisfactorily, however selfishly, possessively. But he is the only point which she ever perceives outside of herself, recognized, accepted, included, that is true, into her own life, but allowed to exist apart from her self-centered existence. You may remember this passage in the Screwtape Letters where the old devil wonders at what Christ means by loving. He explains that he can't believe in love when Christ speaks of it, because he sees that Christ claims to love and yet allows his creatures to remain free and independent. He does not try to possess them. While the devil explains that when he loves, he wants to possess, and he explains to the miserable nephew whom he is teaching the art of devilry, he explains to his nephew that I love you, and the more I love you, the more I wish to possess you, and one day will come when I will take hold of you, when I will possess you totally, when I will devour and digest you so that nothing is left of you except what is in me. Well, this is the extreme of the opposite of love. But in the case of Lester, she had something that was intermediate. Nothing existed for her except this man who had a certain right of existence, because love had disclosed to her that he could exist. Different from her, unidentified to her, and yet related in the deepest sense and to the deepest degree. At the moment when Lester discovers her husband, she begins to discover other things, because the discovery of him sets into motion memories of other people related to him, to her, to them, in an ever-widening circle of relationships in which love was present to a certain degree and a certain extent. And from then onward, she begins to rediscover the earthly city, the city of men, and move towards the knowledge and the discovery of the city of God. This example again shows another way in which both relatedness and distance, freedom from self and from the other person, self-centeredness, which culminates in the mystery of love, is essential. If we want to meet, if there is any meeting at all in view for us. And you see in the Gospel how that works continuously, how only those who have a spark of love for Christ begin to discover each other around him, or else those who have a spark of human love become capable of discovering Christ. Apart from this, there is no discovery either of not enough to accept the existence of the other, not enough to see him even with incipient love. We always run the danger of destroying all our vision, all our understanding by false judgment. Because even things which we have discovered, that have disclosed themselves to us in terms of meaning and beauty, can be made meaningless and, to use the words of Alice in the Wonderland, uglified by the wrong judgment. The example which I have already given to some of you is this anecdote from the life of the Fathers of the Desert. One of them, together with a group of his disciples, come to one of the cities of Egypt. They settle at the gate of the city, and they see a woman come in brilliant array and in the gleam of her beauty. All the disciples cover their heads in order not to see temptation that comes at them. And they escape this kind of temptation to a certain degree, but they do not escape another temptation. They want to see what their master is doing. And so from under their cloaks, they look at their master to see what he is doing. And they see with dismay, because they are too respectful for indignation, that he is just looking at this woman who is walking past their group. When the temptation has passed, the story doesn't tell us why they discovered that the temptation was already within the gate, so that they may also have had a look towards temptation. But when the temptation is passed, they turn on to their master and say, "How could you do that? How could you look at this woman coming towards us, passing us?" And he says, with the purity of heart, of saintliness, he says, "Oh, how dirty you are. You saw temptation coming your way. I just was entranced by the beauty which God had created. It never occurred to me that it was temptation." You see that in the given case, judgment can either right or wrong whatever we have seen or recognized. The moment they have called this woman temptation, they have condemned her, ruled her out, and refused her the right to exist in her own right and in her otherness, and therefore become incapable of distancing themselves, because the wrong judgment, as well as the refusal to accept the other person's existence, links us to the other person and makes us prisoners of this wrong and falsified relationship. If you look at the gospel, you will see how continuously all these situations which I have discussed more if we choose to, for contribution in discussion. I saw a certain number of reprobation on certain faces while I was making certain of the points. So I think a good occasion for protest to come. I could even call names for their work.
It is what we see and what we hold up to ourselves. that one of the conditions for the perfect encounter was keeping a distance. And yet, with many of the saints, as I think especially before, think of being possessed by Christ, as if there's no distance. I think St. Paul says, now I live, yet not I, but Christ who lives in me.
I think that's one of the things which I don't feel I can explain, in the sense that one should have at least some experience of what is spoken of to explain. But what I feel is that when St. Paul says, "This is not I, but Christ who lives in me," he does not mean that he is indwelt so that his self has been pushed out and another self has taken possession, almost physical possession, the way in which one can, well, take possession of a flat having evicted the previous owners. Because in that case, the ideal he would put forward to us is really that we should disappear in all that is valuable and real in us, to be a shell, more or less empty, practically empty, with Christ's presence in us, conquered and displayed. Well, I don't think that this is true, but if I may attempt an image, I have told a certain number of you about a woman who, during the revolution, took the place of another woman who had two children and was shot instead. And the story doesn't end in an act of heroism. The story continues in the fact that this other woman and her children have always thought of their lives as being their own, but also that they should live their lives. That they should be up to the sacrifice that gave their lives, that gave them life. In other words, that they should live this other woman's life in their own life. And I think this is probably, at least to me, nearer what St. Paul says than this idea of eviction and displacement. You can imagine that very well. I don't mean to say that any of the three has made a phenomenal success of it, but they have been aware that they had, that their lives were there only because another life and gone, and that if they were to live worthily, they couldn't be simply living worthily on their own, according to their own standards. They had to live up to the other woman's standards. This is the only approximation of understanding I have got about this passage of St. Paul.
Father, haven't you said also, you've used the image of a window, which I think is very good, that the light which illumines the window comes from behind it and is not proper
then this sort of joint answer. Is there anything more to be said to explain it is not I, it is Christ who lives in me? Has anyone any knowledge about it, read or experienced? But if not, we have got to leave you with the little you got.
In
what way? Able to look at the two separately, in the same way in which a physician says, antibiotic. The word antibiotic means, again, life. But whose life? The perfect antibiotic, if you want, the virus and the patient, kill the patient. But that's not the thing which we do. At least, that's not what we aim at. And that is just the thing, the way in which we should treat evil in a person, sin in a person, all those things which you can lump in inadequacy, opacity, and so forth. If we don't do this, then we'll never see anything except evil in the person. We cannot assume anything, because if you see so dirty water, you can see only dirty water. It's only by letting it, settle down, that you can in the end discover that there is something which is water or something that was dirt. And I think that's something which we do with people whom we love, which we hardly ever do with people whom we don't love. And what we further do with people whom we love, we very often find that this opacity is just charming. Any more about water pollution?
Never seen love because it doesn't understand.
The problem is just to become able to see the understanding Chernina gives. Yes, indeed, there are whole types of things of which he is not aware. But is it true to say that the child has no sin and isn't aware of it? It's another thing.
And the child knows very well.
Identify sin too much with evil.
supposed to have her best.
But
what I'm saying is this.
In France.